It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Despite medical advances, stigmas still exist for people with HIV. This is an added burden for couples hoping to become pregnant, in which one partner is HIV positive. In her book, Positively Negative, our guest, author Heather Berner, chronicles the challenges faced by two couples. She's in Pittsburgh and will speak at Point Park University tomorrow at 6 p.m. She's with us in studio now. Heather Berner, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Nice to be here.
Also taking part in the conversation is Dr. Catherine Bungie, OBGYN, specializing in infectious diseases at McGee Women's Hospital of UPMC. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
And you can join the conversation with your comments and questions at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number 412-246-2002. Heather Berner, this was a fascinating story, a very compelling read, and I'm curious how you got onto this story that you tell in your book, Positively Negative.
Well, I first met and spoke to Susan and Dan Hartman, who were one of the two couples in the book, in about 2011. I'm a journalist, freelance writer. I was writing a story for a hemophilia publication, and I was writing a story about this for their publication. I met this couple, and they told me that they had unprotected sex and had a baby, and no one got HIV, and it just blew my mind.
You're like, how did this happen?
Exactly. Actually, what I thought was, everybody has to know about this.
Yeah, right.
Because, you know, I grew up in the 80s, and I have a very healthy fear of HIV, and I think we all do. And what they did broke the stigma, and it was completely safe at the same time. It really was a story that needs to be told.
And there was a long, arduous road to them getting to that point. And their personal, the personal stories of these two couples dovetails with doctors that you profile in this story who did amazing research. Before we get to the doctors, who are the couples? You don't give their real names in the book. But who are they, and how did you, you mentioned how you found one, and then the other came?
Sure. Well, the first couple I found through that interview, and those are their real names, Susan and Dan Hartman.
Right, okay.
They're very public. They've been interviewed by CNN. They want to get the word out there. They want to change the stigma around HIV. The other couple, Poppy and Ted, is what I call them in the book. That's not their real name. I found them through, I'm based in San Francisco. A lot of the research, not research, but a lot of treatment around HIV happens in San Francisco. And I was in contact with them, and they suggested I talk to this woman, Poppy. It's not, again, not a real name, but I spoke to her, and they're the ones that have the really arduous story. You know, they went through just unimaginable things trying to get pregnant, you know,
like a dozen years worth of
stuff. A dozen years of waiting. And they were both couples really tried to do this carefully, conscientiously, safely. And I think that that is one of the messages of this book. People think couples who get pregnant through unprotected sex and one of the people has HIV, they're being reckless. But what I found at the same time these couples were trying to get pregnant and doors were being slammed in their faces from doctors who have the same idea of HIV as the rest of us, the research was being done to show that this was really safe and reasonable. And safe and reasonable. And I think that that is the message that most people don't know.
And the story unfolds over this period of a dozen years. But how long did you spend working on it?
Well, I started working on it in 2011 when I first met this couple, and I thought, I've got to write more about this. I need to write as much as I can about this. And I kept pitching it and pitching it. And in that time, I got close to the doctors at UCSF, and they kept suggesting people for me to talk to, and I kept talking to more people. And so I probably worked on it off and on from 2011 to 2014 when it came out.
And there is you're based in California, and there's part of the story here is the situation that exists in California where there had been this ban on HIV men donating sperm for the purpose of something that's called sperm washing, which I can have Dr. Bungie explain for us. Talk about this process and why it was so controversial and banned by some states, including California.
Sure. Sperm washing is a way to prepare sperm from an infected man, to wash it and prepare it and to kill the HIV virus so that at the end of the processing, you have a sample that's HIV negative. There's no detectable HIV particles in it. And Heather outlines that it had been banned in several states for fear of possibly missing one virus that may eventually be transmitted to the female who's uninfected and eventually infect her. And I think, you know, there's a lot of data now to suggest that sperm washing is very, very safe. And a lot of these laws are gone. The problem is that still not every center offers that as an option for couples. And for us, for example, in Pittsburgh, when I have a couple that's has different HIV statuses with a man being positive and we talk about sperm washing, we actually use often a clinic in New York. So it's not easy to find the services, but they do exist.
Again, 412-246-2002 if you want to join our conversation. And Dr. Bungie, and I want to be sure to mention that you are gynecology consultant for the Pittsburgh AIDS Center for the treatment clinic at UPMC. How many couples are there like those in the book? I'm guessing a lot, but I'm wondering how many have pursued having a baby as doggedly as
right.
as this couple.
Heather and I were just talking about that outside. It's an unknown number, and it's far, far more than we are aware of. And accessing those couples is one of the reasons why we're both really happy to be here today, because couples might not know that there are options for them. So in my own practice at Pitt, I would say I probably have had this conversation with three women in the last year. But there are many, many more than that.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Heather.
One sign of how many couples there are that might benefit from this, and I don't know in terms of conception, but just couples that are women who are in relationships with HIV-positive men, the CDC recently came out with its estimates of how many people could benefit from, we haven't discussed this yet, but this drug Truvada that is approved by the FDA for HIV prevention. So HIV negative people would take it and would prevent them from getting HIV. It has estimated that there are about 460,000 straight women in the U.S. who could benefit from it. So that's a very large group of people. That's almost as many as the number of gay men who could benefit from Truvada.
And I want to make sure we mention how the men involved in this contracted HIV, because it's not how maybe a lot of people would assume that they would.
Right. Well, Dan Hartman got HIV when he was 12. He has hemophilia, and he got a tainted blood product in the 80s before they knew how to check for HIV. So he, you know, in terms of stigma, I mean, I hesitate to say that he's a good victim, quote unquote, of HIV, because part of the stigma of HIV is you must have done something really bad to get it.
Right.
And so he doesn't have that situation, but Ted did get HIV when he was using drugs. So now, does he deserve to have HIV because he used drugs? No. But there are a variety of ways that people get HIV, which is, I think, to your point.
Right. And so it's kind of interesting. And, you know, a lot of people would assume that, oh, well, maybe they were bisexual and they were, you know, and, you know, particularly in a place like San Francisco, where that's more a part of the culture than in other places. So what were the options for people in this situation years ago, and how have they changed? You know, something short of, you know, let's close our eyes and pretend like we don't know what the risks are, and we'll just go ahead and take.
I think actually that was what a lot of couples ended up doing, yeah. Mostly for lack of informed counseling from providers.
Exactly.
So years ago, what was really promoted in the United States was a procedure when a couple would present with a positive man and a negative woman, which is obviously a more complicated situation than a negative man and a positive woman.
Right.
You follow me?
I got you.
So with a positive man and a negative woman years ago, what was promoted by the reproductive endocrinology.
And that is the case for both of these couples.
Exactly. In this book, yes. What was suggested would be that the man would have, you know, donate a semen sample, and the woman would undergo IVF. A single sperm from the man would be injected to an egg from the woman and be grown in a lab, and then the embryo itself would be transferred to the woman. And so that was really the reproductive assistance that was promoted aggressively in these situations, and it's incredibly expensive. It's a medically invasive process.
And it's not, the success rate is fairly low.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Yeah. And the couples in my book considered all the options. They considered adoption, they considered IVF, and the process is called ICSI, the injecting one sperm into one egg is even a step beyond regular IVF. They also considered donor sperm, so that the child would be biologically related to the woman but not the man. They considered every option that they could possibly consider, and they eventually, for both financial and, you know, the women really wanted to carry a child, and they wanted that child to be biologically related to their husband whom they loved.
Right, and as you say in the book, whether these couples needed to, you know, whether they needed to be biological parents to their kids, those answers required, you know, all this thinking and talking, which the couples considered to do, continue to do. And, you know, at what point, what made them say, it's got to be, you know, we've got to do this our way. It's got to be, you know, what ultimately happened, which was unprotected intercourse.
Well, it's different for each couple. So Dan and Susan, they had a lot of really tough conversations once they decided to have unprotected sex. But, you know, for them, really, finances were part of the decision, because it's extremely expensive to do IVF, and you're not guaranteed success on the first try. You have to do it many times. You know, I've heard this joke, not from them, but from other people. You can buy a house or you can do IVF ICSI, you know.
But part of it,
spend $100,000 on it.
Right. But what was, I guess, really compelling about the story, the couple who didn't use their real names and the woman's name again was
Poppy.
Poppy wanted a child.
She had always wanted to have a child.
But it had to have her husband's characteristic. It was really important to her.
She wanted her baby to look like her husband. Yeah. And that is an emotional thing that is not based on, you know, you can't do a pro-con list for that. You know,
there's
a scene in the book where they are at Disneyland together with another couple, and they're walking down Main Street.
She's walking behind him and looking at him.
Yeah, she's watching him walk and his gait, and she just thinks, they had decided to do donor sperm at this point. They're like, that's what we're going to do. And she just felt crushed, and she thought, I can't do it. I have to. This baby needs to be like my husband. I mean, it makes me want to tear up now. It's just, it was heartrending for her, because she really just wanted to have a child.
But, you know, good for you as a writer that you incorporated those details, because it really sold, it really helped us understand their motivation, why this was so important to them. And then you begin to identify with them, and you're rooting for them, like, God, I hope they have the baby.
Good. That was, that's how I felt, you know? I mean,
Dr. Bungie.
Paul, I would just add that I don't think that's unique to an HIV couple that's, you know, faced with this issue, that a lot of couples who have infertility for whatever reason are really motivated to have their own genetic children. And I love that Heather emphasizes that these couples are like every other couple. They're dealing with these issues.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that struck me is that I'm a woman, and as a woman, I think at some point in your life you think, and often I think men also do the same thing, you think, am I going to have a child? Like, you have to make a decision, right? And every woman can, not every woman, but most women can relate to that moment, can relate to that conversation with themselves about whether they're going to have a child or not. And so it made me feel like this is not really a story about HIV. This is a story about this kind of universal drive that everybody has, and that doesn't change just because they happen to fall in love with someone with HIV.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and my guest is author Heather Berner, who chronicles the challenges faced by two couples who have the added burden of trying to become pregnant with one partner who is HIV positive. And she chronicles the story of these two couples in her book, Positively Negative. She's in Pittsburgh and speaking at Point Park University tomorrow at 6 o'clock. And also with us is Dr. Catherine Bungie, OBGYN, specializing in infectious diseases at McGee Women's Hospital of UPMC. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. People, don't be bashful. I know it's a delicate subject, but you're free to weigh in with your comments or questions, or it's okay just to listen, because it is a great story. And Heather Berner, how much of this story is about allowing individuals to take a risk?
That's a big piece of it. You know, Poppy had much harder time getting pregnant than Susan did. And she kept going to her doctors. And Susan and Dan did this also. They kept going to doctors asking someone to explain what the risk was. And there's a scene in the book where Poppy had a blog and she said, somebody, please just give me permission to take a risk.
And one of the doctors finally says, go for it.
Yeah. Finally, she finds a doctor that just says, look, your husband has an undetectable viral load, which we haven't discussed yet, but that drastically reduces your risk of transmitting HIV if you have HIV. And they said, go for it. And she felt amazed that she finally got permission. But the story didn't end there. I mean, it was hard for them to get pregnant even after that.
Right, right. There's kind of the, you know, do I need to give a spoiler alert? Do I want to ruin it?
Are you talking about her doctor?
Well, no, when she finally takes the pregnancy test.
Oh, no, the book starts with her with
okay.
her baby. So
yeah, that's
okay.
right,
yeah.
It did. I forgot
so,
about
So, spoiler alert, she has a baby.
Yeah, she does have a baby.
Her baby's two now, and she's adorable.
So,
and she looks like her husband.
Right.
The baby looks like the dad. Yeah.
But she can't see it. She
doesn't see it.
No.
I see the baby, and I go, she looks just like Ted. I mean, it's amazing.
Dr. Bungy, explain the concern felt by those in the medical community when the idea of unprotected sex for HIV-positive people, which, you know, banned by the CDC, of course, was first being considered.
Sure. I think, you know, it's all about risk aversion and what your comfort level is, honestly. And so I think there is no way to have sex with an HIV-positive person and be assured of a zero risk.
But even if you wear a condom, that's...
It's not zero.
Right.
It's just not. And you know, the level of risk that somebody's willing to take is completely individualized to that couple's experience with the HIV virus, to their own relationship, to the other things going on in their life. And so I think that when we encounter couples in this situation, what we try to do is to have very individualized counseling for the couple and talk about all of the options. And so Heather mentioned sperm donation. That is an option, and that is zero risk to the HIV negative woman. But as Heather also outlined, that's not really an acceptable option for a lot of couples who really want their own genetic children. And so then we go through the other options. There's sperm processing with assisted reproductive technologies. There is unprotected intercourse, emphasizing the need for the infected partner to have an undetectable viral load to further reduce the risk of transmission. And then there's this new data emerging about pre-exposure prophylaxis, which we haven't really talked about quite yet. But
why don't you go ahead and explain that?
Sure. So PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, is an antiretroviral medications that are used by an HIV uninfected person to protect themselves from acquiring HIV from an HIV infected partner. So, and Heather mentioned Truvada is the PrEP agent that's been studied most extensively. It's been shown to be effective in men who have sex with men and people who use IV drugs, and also, importantly for this discussion, in serodiscordant couples. So either way, men being positive or women being positive, that there was a large trial called Partners PrEP that demonstrated that daily Truvada use could dramatically reduce the uninfected person's risk of acquiring HIV from their infected partner. And these were done in settings where people didn't have undetectable viral load at the start of the study. So it's, you know, it's hard to know how much PrEP adds to a situation where there's an undetectable viral load here in the United States in resource-rich settings. But, I think that there are certainly lots of options to couples, and going through the studies and talking about the risks is really important, and whether or not they're willing to accept that risk is really a personal decision.
And this is a relatively recent phenomenon.
Sure, yeah, PrEP. And so what we were talking about, you know, the sort of next step in the research world is to consider PrEP in the periconception period. So what are we adding if we introduce the idea of PrEP specifically for women who are intending to get pregnant from an HIV-positive partner? And that data is, still sort of being amassed. There have been some studies. We have some small studies that demonstrate that there were no transmissions and that it's effective. But, you know, we take our lead from the Department of Health and Human Services, and they're a little bit... rightfully
conservative.
So, conservative.
Well,
and
you really can't blame,
no.
A medical organization or the doctors even because they want to protect their patients, but there's also how much of it is about protecting yourself, that if you give a bad piece of advice, that patient is going to come back to you and say, you told me it was okay to do this, and now I'm, you know, God forbid I'm HIV positive.
Yeah. I don't know, to be honest with you. I'm not sure that probably enters into the equation. I think in my own mind, if I think about what I worry about, is that adherence is essential. So meaning that if you are going to use PrEP, you have to use it. It's like condom use. Condoms prevent HIV, but they only prevent HIV if you use condoms. And likewise, PrEP can prevent HIV acquisition, but you have to use it. And so I think that having a really in-depth conversation with the couple and explaining that adherence is really, really important in this situation.
Being very, very careful and, you know, about having, you know, if you're going to have this unprotected sex, you have to do it around the time of ovulation.
Exactly.
You know, and there's all these different things you have to adhere to. There's no guarantees, but this is the only chance you have of a pregnancy without the spread of HIV.
Well, and the CDC has really clear and I think easy to access guidelines for how providers should prescribe PrEP for women trying to get pregnant via their HIV positive husbands. You know, so the information is out there. I think that one of the issues is, you know, we talk about risk. I think doctors maybe in general, and this is a generalization, but doctors in general are a little bit more risk averse than the couples are. You know, we were speaking before we came in here about how sometimes women feel like it's inevitable they're going to get HIV because they're with their partners and they have to come to terms with it. As Susan said in my book, she said, I'm always at risk every single time I have sex with my husband, and that's a risk I'm willing to take. I think a lot of doctors, they're trying to uphold the Hippocratic Oath. They're trying to do no harm, mm-hmm. and they see the risk as harm. So harm reduction is not necessarily something doctors are interested in or that they feel that they can support. Do you feel like that's accurate?
Yeah, you're asking
yes, sorry.
Dr. Bungie.
I do. I mean, I think you're right. Every doctor has a different risk aversion,
yes.
right? So,
right.
you know, I feel like as an OBGYN that works in the PAC clinic and has a lot of HIV positive patients that I'm comfortable under discussing that risk. And I think in the setting of serodiscordant couples, especially when we're talking about a woman who is negative, that requires that there's an upfront discussion about fertility intentions. And I'm not sure that that conversation is happening in HIV serodiscordant couples or regular people too, for that matter, that fertility preconception counseling is incredibly important for any chronic condition, including HIV.
Well, there's also the concern that other couples will look at this or hear about it and take it the wrong way and maybe not be as careful as people who are having these ongoing conversations with medical professionals, with their doctors. There's also an interesting, it's such a great multi-layered story, but Heather, there's also the interesting aspect of your book in which, I can't remember which one of the couples it was, but they talked about just the revelation of having, you know, having sex without a condom and how much they were enjoying that.
Yeah.
And, but of course, the aim is to get pregnant and then it happens really quickly. So they're happy they got pregnant, but they're disappointed that they have to go back to using the condom again.
Yeah, that's Susan and Dan. And they said, yay, we got pregnant. Oh, we got pregnant, you know, because I spoke to Susan and Dan not that long ago, and they said, we're still waiting for doctors to come to us and say it's okay to have unprotected sex. Because, you know, most doctors will tell you, researchers will say, people say they use condoms, but they don't. And these people, you know, I have no way of independently verifying this, but they swear up and down that they always use condoms, and they're incredibly careful. And I think both the husband wants to protect his wife, you know, like as a man, as the husband, he wants to protect his wife and keep her safe and healthy. And the wife obviously doesn't want to get HIV. But so
there's a lot to think about there.
Yeah. And they had to have a lot of really tough conversations like, OK, what if you get cold feet? What if you get cold feet in the middle of sex?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, that's a tough conversation, you know, and they were really upfront and they had. I mean, I think it's a good skill for any parent to have. They got to practice those skills before actually having a child. But, you know, they had to really talk about how much risk they were willing to take on. It was really remarkable.
It's been a fascinating conversation. It's a fascinating book, and you'll get to hear more about it tomorrow when the author of Positively Negative, Heather Berner, talks about her book at Point Park University. It's at 6 o'clock tomorrow that she will be speaking. And again, it's a fascinating book. It's called Positively Negative. And our guest has been the author, Heather Berner. Heather, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Also, thanks to Dr. Catherine Bungie, OBGYN, specializing in infectious diseases at McGee Women's Hospital of UPMC. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, we will talk about the story of a newspaper that's been started in the East End. It's called Print because it's not on the web. We'll tell you about it when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.